So, Flora, where did you get involved in this whole thing? I was surprised that all of a sudden, out of the woodwork, after some 30 or 40 years, somebody came back and said, "Boo, how did you do this?"
Is that right? People haven't been knocking down your door for this information?
Nobody, nowhere, no how.
This is Don Dufek. And it's weird more people aren't bugging him, because Don helped invent a robot that people rely on for their most basic needs.
Welcome. Rescan your first item.
Scan item one at a time. Touch the item lookup button to find
non-bargained items in the bagging area.
Bananas to the bag.
Times baked beans.
The self-checkout machine.
We invented it.
Today we are telling you every little thing about the self-checkout machine. Why was it invented? How did it take over the world? And, wait for it, what does this unassuming robot beeping at the end of aisles have to do with why you don't have any free time? That's where we end, but we're starting with Don, when he was a teen working as a grocery bagger, when grocery stores were ridiculous.
When I started, we had a counter up in the front of the store.
Okay, first, you have to erase the image of the modern grocery store. Instead, picture a long counter between you and the food, and then a clerk who has to get everything for you.
Customer would walk in, they would have a list, and they'd say, "I'll have Quaker oats, or I'll have a pound of coffee, or I'll have a dozen of those cookies." And we would literally wait on the customer, go find the stuff, bring it up to the counter, and we would write it out on a little charge slip.
This is the full-service era of grocery shopping.
It sounds absolutely silly, but that was the process.
That was the super efficient process until a charismatic entrepreneur with a big idea disrupted the shit out of the grocery industry.
My mama taught me how to shop at Piggly Wiggly.
We're the original self-service supermarket, opened in 1916.
The Piggly Wiggly. A grocery store chain started in Memphis by a guy with a real knack for naming.
People would ask him, "Why did you come up with that name?" And he was a bit of a smart aleck. Sometimes he said, "So people like you could ask me that question."
This is Mike Freeman. He's a Memphis tour guide, and he wrote a book about the founder of the Piggly Wiggly, a smart aleck by the name of Clarence Saunders. And the story goes that Saunders got the name for the store while he was traveling. So he's on a train.
Looking out the train window, he saw this mother pig and the little piglets, and they're all competing to feed off the mother pig, and it sort of reminded him of store customers competing for the attention of a clerk. And so he had his name, Piggly Wiggly.
It's such an unbecoming comparison for customers.
Well, that's what reminded him. I mean, he actually said this in an interview, so...
So Saunders realizes that all these piglet customers are being funneled through this one sow clerk, and he has this epiphany about the clerk.
"Well, why should I pay this guy to stand there and get someone a half pound of coffee when they can reach for it themselves?"
They can use their own arms.
Yeah, they can use their own arms.
Clarence Saunders ushered in the retail era of customers using their own arms. Obviously, this concept spread beyond the grocery store, but it took time.
People said, "You're nuts. People aren't going to do that. You know, they're too used to being waited on. They're not going to push a cart up and down the aisle and shop for themselves."
People had never picked out their own groceries before. Like, touching products unsupervised was a new feeling. Not to mention, the whole layout of the store was different. All the goods went from behind the counter to aisles. And so Saunders had to train people how to use the store.
"And you walk through a turnstile, and you walk down one aisle, and then you walk all
Going into an early Piggly Wiggly was like walking through a track. There was one single authorized path.
He made you walk through every section of the store before you come back to the front and come to the checkout stand. He was trying to break some habits."
You know how people love having their habits broken. But you know what people did like right off the bat? Cheaper stuff. Fewer clerks meant that Saunders could price his products lower.
1923, he had the third largest chain of stores in the United States.
Wow.
It was 7 years after you open the first door.
This retail-shattering idea of letting customers do their own shopping, it was huge. Unfortunately for Clarence Saunders, he made some bad financial decisions and lost control of the company. But he was not fazed. His next venture seriously was a mind-blower.
The Caduzel was the ultimate self-service. He thought he could run the whole thing with two employees.
Yes, the Keydoozle. Look, the dude knew how to brand.
Yes, Key does it all. That's what Caduzel's supposed to be.
It's 1937, and this is Saunders' most futuristic grocery store vision yet.
Think of it as a giant vending machine.
That I'm inside of? Where am I?
You go into a building and you see a wall of vending machines.
A popular scientific plan of purchase. At Memphis, Tennessee, groceries, meats, and canned goods are dispensed in accordance with a new sales idea called Caduzel. On entering the store, customers obtain one of these purchase keys. Each key contains a different number and a roll of paper tape. There are no clerks. The customers make their own.
You would be handed a special key, and then you're on your own to wander through this giant vending machine.
Let's say the can of tomato soup is on display. So you want the tomato soup, you put the key in the slot.
You would go through Caduzel like this, putting your key in slots next to whatever items you wanted. And then the key, weirdly, doesn't actually open the vending machine. Nothing happened until you handed the cashier the key.
And then all the items you selected are supposed to come down the chutes and down a conveyor belt and then come to the cashier's desk.
And by the time customers reach the cashier's desk, their orders are filled and ready for them. It won't be long before science will produce a slot machine that will turn out a full-course dinner the size and shape of a pill.
Why are we not living in a Caduzel world? Because the technology was a total disaster.
You know, you had breakdowns and some, you know, obviously the keys would probably bring you the wrong item. So they spent a lot of time fixing things and then fixing orders.
These tech problems were Caduzel's ultimate downfall. It went out of business in 1949. Saunders kept trying to innovate for the rest of his life, but he did not have another big success or even a small one. Even though most of us don't know Clarence Saunders as a name, his idea, this idea that customers could serve themselves, it changed retail.
This idea has spread all over the world, literally, where you have supermarkets everywhere. You have some version of Walmart almost everywhere nowadays. I think Saunders, one of his kind of egotistical slogans was Piggly Wiggly all over the world. And this is when he had about 8 stores in Memphis. So he was quite ambitious, but in a way, his idea did spread all over the world.
Which brings us back to teenage grocery clerk Don Dufek. So by the 1980s, Don had worked his way from bagger to senior vice president of Kroger. And by then, grocery stores were all self-serve. Scanners and barcodes had been invented. People were using credit cards. All the ingredients were there for a machine that would let customers super self-serve themselves.
Yes.
And at the time, Kroger was trying to solve a problem.
Because number one complaint in the stores was slow checkout counter.
Kroger also wanted to cut down on labor costs.
And we said, you know, there certainly has to be some place for robotics in our business. And it's got to be at the checkout counter. It's, you know, the most labor-intensive piece that we've got within the walls of that store.
Around this time, Don met an inventor named David Humble, who said that he had an idea for a checkout counter robot. Don was intrigued, and they set up this R&D lab in an old warehouse next to the Kroger headquarters, and they started testing.
Part of that design process was with this self-checkout.
Did this seem futuristic at the time?
Way off the wall, absolutely. Again, people say, there's no way anybody's going to do this. And we said, well, let's give it a try.
The very first self-checkout machines landed in a store in 1986. And they were not exactly sleek.
They were clunky. Visualize this. Customer now comes up to the counter, and they have to take items out of their basket. There was no shelf or anything to put a basket on. They had to stand there and take it out of the cart. And now they would scan it, and it would go through a tube, a tunnel, so to speak, and the length of it ran the length of the checkout counter, which would probably be about 6 feet down. So now visualize that tunnel of all this product going through.
And it also talked out loud. If you rang something through that was 69 cents, it would say 69.
This is Sue Hollis.
Oh my gosh. Tell Sue I said hi, hi, hi.
Sue worked with Don at Kroger.
Oh, yes, he was my boss.
And then Sue went on to work with a company that manufactured these self-checkout machines. And her job was actually to help transition customers. Because again, just like with Piggly Wiggly and the Kidoozle, there were habits to break.
The customer had to learn that it was a convenience for them. They called it a convenience lane.
The convenience lane.
Uh-huh. It was for their convenience to improve speed. Many times you would say, let me show you how it works. You know, you would actually show them that, you know, how it worked, that this is all you have to do.
And it did catch on. About 60% of customers found that the convenience lane was convenient, Don says.
And when all was said and done, we said, this thing is successful.
The self-checkout accomplished both of Kroger's agenda items. First, the complaint that checkout was slow, not a problem anymore. People believed that self-checkout was faster.
Now, from a consumer perception standpoint, you all know that perception is reality, but they were scanning items at maybe 2 to 3, maybe maximum 5 items a minute. And our cashiers were scanning at the rate of 28 to 35 items per minute. But the customer perceived that they were still faster.
And second, Kroger saved on labor costs. Now that the customer was doing this work, they didn't have to pay as many cashiers to do it.
Yeah, it was just like the Basscart. You know, when we installed the Basscart, we dumped all the work on the customer and said, you do it. We're not going to do it anymore.
And, you know, for better or worse, the self-checkout machine has been spreading ever since.
So it was like, voila, it works.
After the break, what happens when every company, every organization dumps work on you?
I mean, give me a break.
We are living in boom times for self-checkout. 50,000 new machines were added to stores last year.
Self-checkout's coming to this big box store. Just love it. We're moving into the future, just enjoying the transition.
But not everybody's enjoying the transition.
Unexpected item in bagging area. Unexpected item in bagging area. Remove this item before continuing.
There's nothing in there.
49. Not bananas. 70. Those are too difficult. Put those back. Put the other ones through.
Coupon not accepted.
Please wait for assistance.
Oh. Okay, bananas don't scan.
Can I put a coupon in there?
Does this every time.
That whole self-checkout thing is a bad fucking idea.
If you fall into the anti-self-checkout camp, you're really going to enjoy getting to know Craig Lambert.
It's a do-it-yourself world. You know, self-service is another term for no service.
When you're talking to Craig, you get the sense that your frustration with scanning your bananas might be totally valid, because that frustration taps into something bigger.
I'm an author, and I wrote the book Shadow Work, which subtitled The Unpaid Unseen Jobs That Fill Your Day.
I love the title, by the way.
God bless. I do too.
Okay, so what is shadow work?
What I talk about when I'm speaking of shadow work is these jobs that are being offloaded onto the consumer by corporations, by organizations, hospitals, schools, nonprofits, government agencies, things to do that used to be someone's paid job, but now they're being done for free by the consumer.
You know, one of the ahas of this idea for me was that we talk a lot about robots taking jobs, but part of what you're describing is that we are taking jobs. Humans are taking other humans' jobs for free.
Yes, that's true. We are doing the jobs that someone else had. When you have a self-service checkout machine, you become your own cashier.
On top of that, we shadow workers don't have any training or skills, and sometimes we're really bad at these jobs.
When you're in a self-service checkout line, you're standing behind amateurs. These are other customers. They are not trained in scanning or checking things out. They're not necessarily very good at that, and they may have to call for help from one of the store employees. And so those lines can move very slowly.
Do you have tips for spotting shadow work in the wild?
Well, in a way, my book is full of tips like that. A field guide to shadow work. Many times we don't realize we're doing shadow work. Because it has sneaked into the daily routine so subtly and so gradually that it isn't perceived.
So here is a rundown for hot spots of shadow work. The gas station, unless you live in New Jersey or Oregon, because pumping your own gas is shadow work. Booking your own travel is shadow work. Answering a customer service satisfaction survey. Navigating a phone tree. Building your own IKEA furniture. Once you know how to spot shadow work, you cannot unsee it. Or at least Craig cannot.
There used to be a thing called a parking meter, but I have noticed recently that we now have a different regime settling in for parking where you don't put coins in a meter, but you have to walk from your car to a kiosk. Well, this is a self-service parking motor. Now it takes 5 or 10 minutes to park your car.
I love how indignant you are about this.
Yeah. I mean, give me a break. This used to be something you could do in 20 seconds. And now the customer is being asked to jump through all these hoops just to park your car.
I wanted to talk about some of my favorite epiphanies of shadow work after reading your book. The buffet.
The buffet, yes. The salad bar was probably the original form of it. You're doing some work that used to be done in the kitchen by going over to the salad bar or the buffet display and serving yourself and putting the food on your plate that you want. There are also self-service yogurt, frozen yogurt emporiums.
So where do you draw the line between kind of, you know, correctly objecting to shadow work and then just being a curmudgeon? I'm just asking for a friend.
Well, you're not actually accusing me of being a curmudgeon. Is that what you're saying?
That's right.
although it's not a purely bad thing. I think, you know, every individual has to. There is no one formula, say this shadow work is good, that shadow work is bad. But I think every individual has got to weigh the benefits, the value of their time. Many of these jobs are not time-intensive or labor-intensive jobs. They are small amounts of time, but on the other hand, there's many of them. And those little nibbles keep adding up. And if they happen 50 times a day, times about a minute, well, there goes an hour of your waking time.
Right. Do you use self-checkout machines yourself?
I do on occasion. I certainly do at the gas station. And I occasionally do in the supermarket and the drugstore when I have very small number of things that have barcodes on them.
That really surprises me, Craig.
Well, in my book, I talk about the disadvantages of doing shadow work, but at times it does have its advantages, I think. Basically, you know, there are those who probably want to make the choice, do you want to interact with someone? How lonely are you? You have the chance to have some social interaction, which you won't have if you go to the shadow work side. If you want to think about supporting the employment of sometimes young people, but often they're middle-aged people too, who have these jobs in the checkout lines, you can do it that way.
How you deal with shadow work is obviously up to you. But it seems like the world is only getting more self-service-y. So hopefully now you have the tools to spot it if you want to.
Once you are aware, I mean, this is the goal of writing this book in a way was like the goal of psychoanalysis, to make the unconscious conscious. If you're aware of it, you're now conscious of the existence of shadow work, that it is a choice you're making. Well, fine, and make that choice if you want. But at least you have a choice when you become aware of it, and you aren't sleepwalking, and just doing these things in a trance of sorts, and sort of wondering why my day got so crowded and why I don't seem to have any spare time anymore.
You know what? I'm going to think about that next time I'm looking at a self-checkout machine.
Good. I've raised your consciousness anyway, Flora.
Absolutely. You did.
Every Little Thing was made by Flora Lichtman, Catherine Wells, Christine Driscoll, Phoebe Flanagan, and Devin Taylor, with help from Nicole Pasulka and Doug Barron. Dara Hirsch scored and mixed this episode. ELT also lives on the social media websites, Facebook and Twitter. Every Little Thing wants to be your friend. Goodbye.